Wherever you are, we are. Your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Today on News One Now, marchers in Minnesota for Black Lives Matter. They are protesting police violence, but people are angry with them for chanting pigs in a blanket. We'll talk to one of the organizers to explain that. A black man in Dayton, Ohio gets pulled over for simply making eye contact with a cop. He taped it, and we have the outrageous video. Dr. Steve Perry talks about opening his new schools, and also we'll discuss charter schools and what does it mean for the future of African Americans in education. From hearing tests to immunizations, we have your full back-to-school physical checklist. Plus, Frankie Beverly loves Vivian Green's new song, and you will too. She talks about the songs in her new CD, Vivid. It's time to bring the funk on News One Now on TV One. Conservatives are outraged by this chant, pigs in a blanket, fry them like bacon, coming from Black Lives Matter protesters this weekend at the Minnesota State Fair in St. Paul. Organizers say that was just one line of the chant. They said they protested for some 4 hours, but it's that one line that has conservatives and others outraged and blaming Black Lives Matter somehow for the shooting death of a cop in Texas. Joining us right now is Rashad Turner, who is one of the leaders of Black Lives Matter Minnesota via FaceTime. Rashad, how you doing?
Say good morning, Roland.
So you have this, first of all, you have this protest several hours long. Critics are saying that this particular chant is endorsing violence against police. First off, people keep asking, what does the chant even mean?
Basically, you know, the chant, And I think that the problem that, you know, we're getting caught up in is the people are interpreting things however they, you know, whatever fits their narrative. So to keep it real with y'all, I mean, we had police officers who were chanting that with us, who were making jokes about everybody loves bacon. So I don't, you know, the video clip makes it seem, you know, however it makes it seem. But on the ground, people were having fun with it. The officers were having fun with it. And, you know, a lot of people are upset. You know, it might not be the best chant to some people, but at the same time, I understand that, you know, people feel a certain way, and people who have experienced certain things, you know, may chant something that's maybe a little bit more radical than what people are used to. But, you know, I feel like we have to be respectful to how people feel. I mean, people are angry.
Do you believe that distracts from really what the focus of the march was? And I'll ask you this here. Do you believe that mainstream media would have even covered your march in Minnesota if this chant didn't take place? Now, you know, we've been focused for a long time on Black Lives Matter every single day, every single week, but would they be focused on the issues if this didn't happen?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't think that, you know, mainstream media has really shown, you know, that Black lives do matter to them. I think they spend a lot of time trying to spin things. And, you know, the thing that's crazy, Roland, is that all of this uproar over a chant, over rhetoric, and there's not that same uproar over what our reality is as Black people. I mean, I would love to think about, you know, the fact that one of us is getting killed every 28 hours. I would love for that to be rhetoric and not reality. But
I want to play something for you. Here's a police chief down in Texas, and he's talking about the shooting death of a deputy there. And here's what he had to say.
We've heard Black Lives Matter, all lives matter.
Hey, if you're going to play this, you got to give me the name, folks. All right, so sorry that we couldn't hear the rest of that. That was Sheriff Ron Hickman talking about this. It was interesting, Rashad, is that you have folks there who are blaming protesters, blaming Black Lives Matter. I mean, all night I was dealing with conservative trolls, Tea Party folks, who were saying that Black Lives Matter is now responsible for cops being killed, and they're responsible for Vester Flanagan shooting two reporters in Virginia. What do you make of that criticism?
I think that it is right in line with, you know, the way this country thinks about black people. They feel that, you know, the actions of one represent, you know, every black person. You know, we're 1,100 miles from Houston, right? We have nothing to do with the heinous act committed by that one guy. I mean, that's craziness. We don't promote violence. You know, my father was killed. So there's nothing that we're going to be promoting. It's nothing that we take lightly. You know, we understand the spin that's on it. But again, we want to stay focused on the issues. We want to stay focused on the facts. While some of these people are just, you know, would rather focus on rhetoric that allows them to keep white supremacy intact.
I want to go to our panel here, Dr. Wilmer Leon, political scientist and syndicated columnist. We also have Angela Peoples, co-director for Get Equal, and David Swerlick, assistant editor for The Washington Post. Wilmer, I'll start with you. Your thoughts, your assessment on this, in terms of, again, this criticism that Black Lives Matter is receiving. Go right ahead.
Well, the simple answer is that the chant was really unnecessary, and is bringing attention, bringing unwelcome, unnecessary attention to a very valid and relevant issue. The bigger thing for me is there really seems to be a generational disconnect between a lot of the Black Lives Matter folks and our older activists and protesters who could really provide them with some very, very valid direction. And, you know, it's hard for me to assess.
Well, first of all, here's the deal, though. That's actually happening. I mean, I can tell you, I know that personally, the number of conversations and dialogues I've actually know of, well, that's actually happening. But here's the deal. It's not like you didn't have young folks during the Black Freedom Movement who were just as vocal saying, no, we're going to do our own thing.
No,
and then
I understand
you had
that.
NAAACP and others saying,
that. Hey,
we need to advise you, don't
no,
do this.
But what I'm saying is you had a Ella Baker, you had a Miss Hamer, you had a Reverend Shuttlesworth providing some very, very sound strategy and process. It's hard for me to assess the chant when I don't know what the end game is in the entire movement.
Well, first of all, you've seen 40 new laws passed in 24 states in the past year. I mean, to me, that's progress. Angela, go
Absolutely.
Ahead.
I think that the fact that we're seeing this pushback actually speaks to the power, the effectiveness, and the really importance of this Black Lives Matter movement, of the tactics that we're using, of the leadership, whether it's from young folks or old folks. The thing that people forget is that many of the Black Lives Matter chapters are actually multi-generational. There are people who have been leading in communities across the country that are now taking their leadership and their direction from young folks and vice versa. So I think that we actually should be talking about this in the context of how powerful and effective this movement is, that we're seeing attempts to look at a soundbite and a chant that happened in one location, that it's not as if that's the mantra of the entire movement. This is one moment, one chant in time, but we're seeing conservatives and other folks as well that are trying to delegitimize the Black Lives Matter activists pick up on this because it's so effective.
David, can I ask you this here? Because here's also, I think was important. Yesterday, you had Elizabeth Hasselbeck, who's on Fox News, who asked the question of this idiot Kevin Jackson, who only gets on television to criticize black people.
Sorry.
And the question for her is, should Black Lives Matter be classified as a hate group? First of all, here's the problem that I have. Black Lives Matter movement is not a group. It's not a single entity. So to say, oh, let's classify all of these folks as somehow a hate group, it's not even that.
No. With regard to Elizabeth Hasselbeck, look, at this point, this many weeks, months, years into this movement, to willingly misunderstand the phrase Black Lives Matter is to willingly misunderstand it. Black Lives Matter doesn't mean Black Lives Matter only. It doesn't mean Black Lives Matter more. It means Black Lives Matter also, and she knows that, and she's willingly misunderstanding it. To the point of the sheriff, I would say this. Look, the killing of the cop in Texas should be condemned, Roland. It's horrific, but it should not be blamed on Black Lives Matter.
Right, because here's the deal. When those two white folks in Nevada, when they kill the cops, what white organization or white activists were actually, was the Tea Party blamed for that? See, no. I mean, so the problem I have, first of all, here's the other piece, which is a factual piece. The police in Texas have not determined a motive. Mm. And so you have all of this conversation saying, oh, Black Lives Matter is to blame, when the cops themselves have not determined a motive as to why this guy allegedly walked up to a cop and emptied 15 bullets into his head and his back. That, to me, is a problem when you're jumping to, oh, you're to blame.
Well, Darren Goforth's life matters. He was a father.
I don't think anyone's saying that.
Eric Garner's life right. matters.
Okay, hold on.
He was a father. He was a father.
I concur, but that's not answering my question. Here's my point. My point is, how is it though that all of a sudden Black Lives Matter is to blame?
Because when we start speaking pro us, conservatives and others immediately interpret that as being anti-them.
Exactly, and that is the exact racial hypocrisy and bias that folks are talking about when they say Black right. Lives Matter. When we see a police officer that is involved in a shooting, and then they're immediately brought in, enveloped by all of the different institutions, the police, the union right. officer, all that. That is an element of hypocrisy that folks are tired of seeing.
Hold tight 1 second. I'm going to a break. When we come back, we're going to pick up on this topic. Also, we'll talk about this case out of Ohio where a cop pulled a brother over for making eye contact with him. Yeah. Eye contact. Also, we'll talk to Dr. Steve Perry about opening his new school and what more parents are doing when it comes to choosing charters for their children. Plus, singer Vivian Green talks about her new CD, Vivid, right here on News 1 Now and TV 1. It is 11 after the hour. Back in a moment.
Okay, government might have shut down.
Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Listen, there's never been a president in our history that did not negotiate over the debt limit. Never. Not once.
But you can count on us. Welcome to News One Now with Roland Martin.
Hey, folks, Roland Martin here. September 14th, we're going to move to 7 a.m. right here. Pipe down. Angela's teaching Wilma over here how to use his dog on Twitter. All right, September 14th, 7 a.m., we're going to move to that time slot, not 9 a.m. Set your DVRs, set your clock. News One Now every day at 7 a.m. beginning September 14th. And so be sure to check us out. And so, again, we're going to bring the funk a little bit earlier for you right here on TV One. Folks, welcome back to the show. I want to go back, pick up on this conversation again, dealing with Black Lives Matter, talking about exactly where that stands. Of course, Wilmer Leon, we got Angela Peoples, we got David Swirlick. We also have from Minnesota, one of the leaders of Black Lives Matter in Minnesota, we have Rashad. Rashad, I want to go back to you because I believe, and I've said this consistently, that one of the reason there's this constant attack against Black Lives Matter activists is because they are achieving results. They've forced the conversation, and they're forcing people to have to deal with this. Los Angeles, they're rolling out their body cameras. That was decided before a lot of this stuff, but other cities is happening as well. As I said earlier, 40 new laws have been passed in 24 states in the past year. That didn't just happen just because.
Exactly. And that's something that here in Minnesota, you know, I'm from St. Paul, Minnesota, Black Lives Matter St. Paul, just to clarify that. In St. Paul, Minnesota, we had the most deadly police department in our state. So, you know, we want our city, we want our governor to start taking some action and making some changes. You know, our protests lasted about 4 hours. We had about 500 people join us. The thing that was amazing was we had about 400 people on the inside of the gates who stopped, listened, supported us. So I think that, you know, when we see the uproar over rhetoric, I think it's just a way to distract and attempt to take us away from our mission. And we got to keep our eyes on the prize. And like you said, you know, 40 new laws across the country, we need to continue to have that reform so the climate in the country can change. When you have a climate in this country that's us versus them mentality, we all suffer from that, Roland.
Here's one of the things, folks, that again, jumps out at me. I keep hearing folks talk about the critics will come up to Black Lives Matter. Don't say this and don't say this. But the reality is, let's say this chant wasn't said. Those same critics don't want them protesting this issue anyway.
No.
So it's not like you have folks who are saying, I'm disagreeing with the chant. Because here's the piece. I don't believe the chant serves the purpose. I do believe having time spent dealing with that takes away from obviously what the issue is. But the biggest critics do not want any of this discussed anyway.
No, that's right, Roland, and I think Rashad's point is a good one as well. But I will say this chant now, Black Lives Matter, has the nation's attention. Whether the nation wants that attention, as you said, is one thing, but Black Lives Matter has the nation's attention. Chants like the Pigs in a Blanket chant, I think, are juvenile, unhelpful to their cause, and also not reflective.
Can I interject?
Yeah, let me just say one thing, Rashad.
Go ahead, David, go ahead.
No, and I'm not putting it on Rashad, and I understand that the movement has different leaders in different places, but I do think that if they're trying to make social change, they can't just dismiss it as rhetoric. That people have their attention now, they have to take themselves seriously.
Rashad, go ahead.
I was going to say, I mean, when you look at that chant, again, yes, it's rhetoric, but the reality is that, you know, every 28 hours a black body is dying. The reality is for our town in St. Paul that the arrest, you know, disparity is 9-1. So, I mean, people feel a certain way, and I don't think it's appropriate for me to tell someone, you know, hey, don't feel this way, because mainstream media might not react to it properly. You know, we want people's attention. And like one of y'all just mentioned, the people who's talking this noise, they don't care about black lives anyway.
But here's the deal, Rashad. I'll tell you this here. When there were people who were holding up signs at Tea Party rallies that were racist, that were targeting President Obama, Tea Party organizers said, well, we can't control who holds a sign up. But the reality is, when somebody holds that sign up at your rally, you're going to get tagged with it. So I understand your point, but there's still going to be a reality that's going to be pushed back. Angela, then Wilmer.
I think that we also have to think about what the message. So, for example, in your Tea Party example, the Tea Party is actually they're not even their rhetoric, their policies, their positioning, their work has racial undertones, right? Like has a context that is anti, not just President Obama, not just his policies, a community.
I understand the policies, but
right,
you're going to get tagged
on this example, though.
Either way,
if you're looking at Black Lives Matter, there no one in Black Lives Matter is saying anything about violence against the police, anything about violence against anyone. That's not a part of the platform. That's not a part of the organization. It's not a part of our values. And so you have to, like that, I feel like you really have to make a distinction. People are like, well, the Tea Party, when they hold these signs, they were held accountable. It's actually very different, because the Tea Party is grounded in really hateful positioning. Black Lives Matter is not.
It's not so much a matter, to Rashad's point, about telling people how to feel. It's a matter of, as an organization, understanding how to communicate.
Right.
There was a reason Julian Bond was the spokesperson for SNCC. There was a reason why SNCC had meetings for 2, 3, 4 hours, and they came out with a consensus about how to not only protest, because it's not about protest, it's about effective social change.
I'll say this quickly. I think that the Black Lives Matter movement, very broadly, will continue to make people feel uncomfortable across the board.
Because
we exist and organize in a way that is outside of what we're used to thinking about, right? Yeah. We're told that you make change through X, Y, and Z means. Black Lives Matter has said no more business as usual, including through the way that we make change.
I want to play this here real quick here. This was a video shot in Dayton, Ohio. I think ties in this subject as well. A brother was driving there, and a cop pulled him over. Why? Because he made eye contact. This is John Felton. He shot this video on August 15th.
I mean, you're going for it, all right?
A warning.
Like I said, it's a violation if you don't turn signal.
Sir, you trailed me for how long? You just needed a reason to pull me over. Like, no disrespect. I don't have nothing against police officers, but all the that's going on now, that's some scary shit. To have a police officer just trailing you, and then you just pull me a reach because you said I didn't signal. You know how that looks? You drive without being in the cop car, right? You know how it is when the police pulling you over. You're like, I'm not doing nothing. Why is he? Every move I make, why is he making it? I'm not doing nothing.
Okay.
Because I have a Michigan plate. Other than that, why was you trailing me?
Because you made direct eye contact with me and held onto while I was passing you.
What? I didn't even see you.
I'm not
going
to argue that anymore, sir. If you want to keep talking about it, I'll just take your license back and give you a citation for the violation. We can take it to court. I'm not going to argue about it anymore.
Okay, sir.
Have a safe day.
Okay. Again, for the cop to admit, yeah, you made direct eye contact with me. That's why I trail you. Wow.
Yeah, no, I mean, that has been a central problem here, right, is that in a lot of these instances, not all, police have misunderstood who they are in the situation. They are public servants, not there to be kowtowed to by people they're stopping.
I'll tell you, it's amazing. Again, if people want to understand the reality of what's going on, that's the perfect example right there. All right, then. Rashad, I certainly appreciate it, man. Thank you so very much for joining us.
Hey, thank y'all. Have a good day, y'all.
Have a good one. Coming up, Dr. Steve Perry talks about opening his new school and the rising popularity of charter schools, especially for African Americans. Also, we'll talk about new immunization requirements needed for the new school year. Plus, Vivian Greene's new single is a bona fide dance hit. I love it. Periscope to it all the time. Well, she'll join us on the show as well. This is News 1 Now on TV One.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with your host, Roland Martin.
All right, folks, Dr. Steve Perry is best known for his Capital Prep Magnet School in Hartford, Connecticut, where he has sent 100% of his graduates to four-year colleges every year since his first graduating class in 2006. He just opened his new school. This is now his school in Bridgeport, Connecticut, and plans to open one in Harlem next year. He joins us via FaceTime right now. Steve, how you doing, man?
Fantastic, man. How you doing?
All right, so you opened this new school, and you told me something interesting. You said that there were black politicians there in Connecticut who literally were threatening to shut down the entire school system to keep you from opening this one school.
No, a little bigger than that. What they threatened to do was to go against the governor's budget to therefore shut down the entire state to stop one 250-child school from opening in a school system in which 5%, I said 5% of the fifth graders are doing math on grade level.
Okay, so here's
95% fail rate.
Now, also, what was the number of people? When you had Capital Prep, was it 4,000 or 5,000 people who were on a waiting list to try to get into your school?
So the school in Hartford, we had over 3,000 students in a year who wanted to get into approximately 50 seats. This year, here down in Bridgeport, the Capital Prep Harvard School, we didn't even have a building yet, brother. I mean, we didn't even have a building. And we have 905 children on our waiting list. 905. That would make us the largest, one of the largest schools in the city, and we just opened.
Wow. Now, I want to pull this up because we discussed this last week. We had a special in New Orleans, their education system there. And I want to give some numbers here because, again, where things have changed. This is from the National Alliance for Public Charter Schools. There are 44 states in America that now allow charter schools. 14% of African Americans are enrolled. We commissioned a study. We called our buddy, Dr. Cornell Belcher, with Brilliant Corners, his research company. They conducted this study. This is what it says, the opinion on public charter schools. 72% of African Americans favor, 13% oppose. Then also, 74% of black families are interested in sending their kids to public charter schools, 18% not interested. But here was also interesting, and that is 79% of black parents said they support using vouchers to send their kids to school. This is different than what you hear from black civil rights groups and black politicians.
Because the black civil rights groups, unfortunately, have been mortgaged by the teachers unions. They've allowed themselves to be bought and sold, unfortunately, by an organization that is largely white and female.
Looks like Steve froze there. So do this a favor.
Interest at heart.
Go ahead. We have a connection.
The truth is, the truth is that our families want choice. And as a result, they're the ones who are overwhelmingly on the waiting lists, hoping to get in. That's the only issue with schools of choice, is that they just can't get in. They don't recognize that the reason why they can't get in is because the politicians are limiting the number of seats in those schools. And the parents are also sick and tired of hearing complaints about having to educate our kids, as if there was a time, this magical time in black history, when black people were doing really, really well, where black kids weren't coming to school hungry or having experienced trauma. At what point in American history have black people been doing so well that our kids have been in an amazing situation?
I want to go to our panel right here. I want to bring in Wilma Leon, Angela Peoples, David Swerdlick. Again, here's what bothers me. Here's Dr. Steve Perry trying to open one school, 250 kids, and literally there were state legislators, African Americans who said, we will shut the whole state down because we do not want to see this one school open. But then when you look at the numbers of black kids there in Connecticut, when it comes to education, the numbers are horrible. That to me is utterly illogical. When the law allows for such schools to be open, but they would say we're going to shut the whole state down for one school?
Well, that I think speaks volumes. Steve's point is very valid in terms of how these politicians have been mortgaged, who they actually hold their alliances and allegiances to. In many instances, it's the unions who make the political contributions to their campaigns, and they are, in many instances, ignoring the issues of their constituents. But you know how I feel about charter schools. I am not anti-charter school. I'm pro-public school system. I want the system fixed, and that has always been my issue.
Now, first of all,
system so every child in the system gets the level of education that they deserve.
I want the system fixed too, but how long black folks got to wait? In fact, you look at the Brown versus Board of Education decision, that was 1954. You still have folks who are trying to talk about an equal education since Brown versus Board of Education.
Because so, Brown said with all deliberate speed, they didn't give you a
hell. It's been 2015.
Well, it's been speed.
Angela,
I think that the challenge I have with the conversation around particularly charter schools and public schools is that it is framed as sort of in one or the other, in either or, that the way that the statistics are told is that black children are doing really, when they go to charter schools, they do really well. When they're not going to charter schools, they don't really well. Again, that's the story that's being told. That's some of the things that I heard here.
By some people.
That's some of what I heard in this conversation. Well, and I think that the reality is it is very much a school to school about the people who are administering the programs. So I think that, and it's also when you're talking about engagement from teachers' unions and particularly the individual members of the teachers and the locals and of the affiliates, their position on how to reform schools to improve them is also nuanced and is also different. So I think that in this conversation, it's important to be clear that not all charters are graduating 95% of their students, and not all public teachers' unions are trying to shut down.
But here's the deal. First of all, nobody said that. I mean, outside is stat specific to Steve's school. And so the reality is there are, first of all, these are public charter schools. So they're also public schools. So that's also part of the mistake.
Right.
We created this, well, it's a charter school. Steve, go ahead.
But Roland, here's the fact. The fact is that when we have a conversation about wanting all public schools to be good, there are quite a few things that we overlook, and we start with the truth. The truth is that our children move at the speed of children, which means that every day that we sit and want is a day that passes them by. And when I say that 95% of the fifth graders in Bridgeport, Connecticut, one of the wealthiest counties in the United States of America, are doing math on grade level, a 95% fail rate, why do we not flip over tables? Who can be patient any longer? What is it that we're waiting for? That school system receives over $15,000 per pupil plus a $40 million building. We receive $11,000 per pupil, and we are in a converted community service center. Yet we have to produce the same or better results or be judged harshly. When we want to truly make sure all children have access to a quality education, we will give vouchers, period.
David.
Yeah, no, I think it's sort of a pox on both houses. On the one hand, and full disclosure, my sister is actually a public school teacher in Connecticut, but I think Steve is right. Look, there is a mortgaging sometimes, especially with Democratic politicians, to the teachers' unions, and that is a problem. But I kind of am with Wilmer on this one, that why not fix the public schools instead of saying, let's take all the kids out of the public schools.
Here's the deal. Right now in Washington, D.C., 44% of all kids in D.C. go to charter schools. 56% go to the traditional school district. It still is standing. The deal, Angela's point is right.
The school system's still broken.
No, but okay.
The school system in D.C. is still broken.
Hold on, you say it's still broken,
but children are still failing.
But here's the deal there. Has it been progress?
Yes.
Okay, so.
But they're still failing.
But here's the deal. But isn't the point of, if they were failing before and there's progress, Isn't that the whole point? See, what the problem
but there's
is
also
the
a demographic shift but, in D.C.
But
there
wait,
are a
wait,
number
wait,
of factors
wait,
that are going to the change
wait,
in D.C.
Okay,
that have nothing
okay,
to,
okay,
that,
okay,
that
okay,
you can't
okay,
attribute
okay,
to charter schools.
Okay, no. Here's the whole point. The point is, are there successful charters? Yes. Are there successful traditional schools?
Yes.
Can they coexist?
Yes.
The problem is, critics don't even want the charters to exist. Mm-hmm. They're just saying, oh no, just get rid of them completely and just be traditional public schools. And to Steve's point, and he's right, the bottom line is, our kids are the ones who've been sucked down this drain. And then when they're 30 and 40 and can't read and not educated, they go, man, we're still waiting on a school system to get fixed. Steve,
final comment. Roland, you ever notice that there's never a budget crisis when we're building a prison for mm-hmm. Black and Latino and poor children? But there's always a rub or a choice when we have to decide whether or not we want to open a charter school or provide vouchers or school choice. Folks, we are in a system that is designed to send Black, Latino, and poor children to prison, not to college. And we, Black people in particular, can no longer allow ourselves to be co-conspirators in our own demise.
Steve Perry, I certainly appreciate it, brother. Thank you so very much. We'll continue our conversation. Up next, the Urban House Call doctors talk about immunization, plus Vivian Green's on the show discussing her new CD, 23 Before Top of the Hour, News 1 Now on TV 1.
Okay, government might have shut down.
Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Listen, there's never been a president in our history that did not negotiate over the debt limit. Never. Not once.
But you can count on us. Welcome to News One Now with Roland Martin.
All right, more talk about schools. And guess what? Folks are going back to school. Kids are going back. You're dealing with clothes and backpacks, homework already, all that drama. But what about the issue of immunizations? That is critically important. And many schools are also requiring physicals for students. Let's talk to right now with the Urban House Call doctors, Dr. Rob, Dr. Carla. Folks, how you doing?
Hey, Roland.
Doing great.
All right, then. So school is starting, and there are some health needs for kids going back to school.
There are, and I think parents oftentimes don't think about how important it is to really have a school physical, but it really will address many things from hearing, vision, and food allergies, all sorts of things that really can impact a child's ability to learn.
And I swear, kids today are allergic to everything. I do not recall growing up being allergic
right.
to every damn
You're
thing.
Right.
But
right.
I swear kids are allergic to everything.
You're right. It's really an epidemic, and actually about 10% of children are allergic to some food or another.
Well, first of all, Dr. Robin Chuck, if she was here, she was talking about it, because we
clean our hands.
We clean so right. much, right. and yeah. we got so many chemicals that,
yeah.
frankly, our body has no resistance
right.
To fight things off. So, all right. Yeah. Let's talk about eyesight.
Okay, so the first thing you want to discuss at your child's school physical is vision. Now, this is so important because a lot of times, if you are not getting your child's vision screened because they aren't complaining about it, then they may very well end up being a behavior problem in school because they're not able to see the board, so they're joking around in the back of the room with their friends. And so vision, although oftentimes underrated, is very, very, very key. And a child oftentimes won't know to say something unless they're getting their vision screened.
So. All right.
So next, we're going to talk about hearing. And similarly, hearing is of critical importance. Now, we recognize that we get those newborn hearing screens when our infants are first born. But depending upon what state you live in, you may not get another hearing exam throughout your entire academic career. And these students are oftentimes put in special education classes because they're thought of as being inattentive.
Huh?
Yes.
All the time.
So wax buildup. Uh-huh.
Exactly. So they're being labeled as inattentive, similarly may have what they think are behavior issues when, in fact, they can't hear. And if a child can't hear, they don't know that they can't
right.
hear
mm-hmm.
because they don't know what they're comparing it to. And so while certain states may not require or mandate it, you should certainly ask your pediatrician about doing a hearing exam on your back-to-school physical.
Why are parents adding EpiPens to these kids' backpacks?
Well, Roland, like we said, about one out of every 10 children has an allergy to one food or another. We know tree nuts are very common food allergy that we see. And so EpiPens are important. And you want to make sure that the school knows if your child has a food allergy. You want to make sure that the teacher knows, and coaches, if there's any sort of after-school activity. That we have a lot of children that participate in outdoor sports that are allergic to bee stings mm-hmm. and things of that nature. And so EpiPen is definitely important to discuss at the school physical and to have multiple ones on hand.
All right, what's next?
So next, we're talking a little bit about immunizations. You know, I think that that's a very controversial subject, especially
right.
in the climate we're in now. But the reality is immunizations are the safest, most effective effective means of disease prevention. We recognize that, you know, just 60 years ago, we saw a multitude of cases of polio, and about 15,000 people were paralyzed per year as a result of polio. But now that the polio vaccine has been in place for several decades, rarely, if ever, do we see it. And so immunizations are still the safest, most effective means of disease prevention. And so we certainly want to encourage the viewers to have that dialogue with their pediatrician, their provider, as to what immunizations are required for their student.
All right. Well, Shirley, appreciate it. Thank you so very much. Dr. Rod, where can folks get more information?
UrbanHouseCall.com or on Twitter at UrbanHouseCall.
All right. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Roland.
All right. Keep the EpiPen away from him, bro. I'm good. Coming up, Vivian Green talks about her new CD, Vivid, right here on News One Now. Trust me, you're going to enjoy this fun conversation. For more news and information, go to newsone.com. Hit me up on Twitter at Roland S. Martin, or go to our Facebook page, or go to my personal Facebook page. 15 before top of the hour, News One Now on TV One.
Okay, you might want to get close to your radio.
My deal is we can have an honest conversation where both sides have some issues.
I love it.
I want to officially welcome you to News One Now with Roland Martin.
Folks, Vivian Green is known for her past hits, Emotional Roller Coaster and Gotta Go, Gotta Leave. Well, I recently sat down with the singer to talk about her new CD, Vivid, and the one song that's burning up the charts. You might have heard this before, a little Frankie Beverly and Maze mix. Here we go. Of course, that song is there by Vivian Green, inspired, of course, by Frankie Beverly and Maze. And she joins us right here in News One Now. What's happening? I'm all good.
Thank
okay.
You so much
I play that song every now and then.
Every now and then. Yeah.
Every now and then. So, yeah, I've had several periscopes while I've been jamming that song right there. And so, first off, folks are loving this song, obviously. And so for you to be able to have a mix with a Frankie Beverly and Maze hit, that has to be pretty cool.
It's super cool, especially because Frankie Beverly likes the song and approved of it.
Right.
And, you know, we didn't have any issues with the publishing, and he just was very supportive. And so once you have, like, that stamp of approval from a legend like that, you know, it's
so how did
it
happen? Did he have to hear the song first? What happened?
Well, actually, we put it out as a buzz record, meaning not for sale, just to give people a little taste of what was to come from on my new album, Vivid. And Sirius XM started playing it, and we didn't know, so he heard it.
Whoa,
and we were like, whoa.
Sirius started playing Get Right Back to My Baby.
Yeah, this is last year.
Y'all didn't know.
No.
And Frankie's driving going, who got my song?
Exactly.
And what they song?
Exactly. So we called Sirius and asked him to take it off so we could kind of get it together. But he was really great about it, like I said, just really really gracious and supportive, and he really likes the song.
Right.
So it was, you know, an easy thing. We just get the publishing information straight and get all that legal stuff together, and now it's all fun.
All right, that's pretty funny.
Yeah, that. He gets most of the money when you hear it, so it's all good.
Sure he doesn't mind that.
Yeah, I'm sure he doesn't. Yeah, but I've opened for him several times, like, you know, throughout my career. So he's always been a very gracious, nice man. So, you know, that's continuing. So thank you, Mr. Beverly.
So this song here really sets up the whole CD.
Yeah, it does, because it's entitled Vivid, and it is full of life and energy and zeal and all those wonderful things a lot of my previous CDs weren't necessarily full of, because they were very sad girl, sad song.
Why? What's up with the sadness?
I think my first album with the single Emotional Roller Coaster was written when I was 19, 20 years old.
Right.
It was my very first heartbreak. So I was pretty much purging.
So you broke up with somebody, and so.
Yeah, and that was my very first time.
That
you guys heard all that. And I was, you know, I was a young girl, and now I'm grown. So it's a different perspective, Vivid is. I do speak on heartbreak. I speak on spirituality, self-love, empowerment. I speak on all things. But no matter what it is that I'm talking about, there is a message of empowerment. There is not an album that's going to make you want to cry yourself to sleep like some of my past music.
Okay.
And like I said, it's not all
Lord,
happy.
Praise the Lord. Praise the Lord. Praise the Lord.
And it's not all happy, so I don't want people to think that. It's not like, I'm so happy every song. It's not necessarily that, but it's empowering. So if I touch on something sad, it'll make you want to get up and get over it, opposed to...
All right, so let's see here. I always do this with artists. First of all, how many songs on here did you write?
All of them.
You wrote all of them?
Yeah.
All right, so the one that got away.
What about it?
What's the story behind the song?
Well,
what about it? Can somebody tell Vivian this is an interview?
Well, I didn't know if you heard it.
Tell Vivian this is an interview.
Stop it. Don't.
About her app.
Don't do that. I didn't know if you heard. Okay, so it is pretty much about the one. don't mess with me. It's about the one that got away, but it's saying, like, you know what? I'm tired of thinking about you. I'm tired of harping on it. I'm just ready to move on from that at this point. It's not going to happen. We tried it. It's done. It's over. You know, we cool, but that's it.
All right, work.
Yeah. Oh, that's a very grown and sexy song.
Oh, grown. Okay, see, I had to change. Ooh, that's a very grown and sexy song.
It is.
Okay.
And it's very up-tempo, so you can work out to it.
Oh, it's an up-tempo, grown and sexy song.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
So basically, that's a pole song. What? I mean, that's the way you said. Am I the only one who thought that?
Now, why are
you messing with me? Ooh, it's a grown and sexy song, and it's an up-tempo song. That's a pole. Now, we had a pole dance on here talking about her workout. Okay, I'm just checking. All right, then.
And along the lines of Get Right Back to My Baby. Let's
oh, okay.
That.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. You the one that's a grown and sexy song. All right, Broken.
Broken is about love gone wrong, but she is powerful. She is okay. She's gonna move past it. She's not angry. She's not broken.
All right, now you got a song on here with Pimp Daddy, Raheem Devon.
Yeah,
All I Want Is You.
All I want is you.
We know that's a slow song.
That is a slow song.
Duh, Raheem Devon.
That's the first slow song on the record, so okay. It's all up tempo until you get to number four. It's about a couple, they just want each other. They don't wanna do anything else. They don't wanna go out to dinner. They don't wanna.
They just wanna be in the house.
Wine and dine. They just wanna be together.
Stick it up. All right, folks, again, the new CD is called Vivid by Vivian Green. I can't wait to get it. She's FedExing it to me, so I'm going to do a listening session on Periscope. I'm Roland Martin. I'll be back in 60 seconds. News 1 now on TV 1.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News 1 now with your host, Roland Martin.
Birthday shout-out time. Actress Zendaya Coleman turns 19. Detroit Pistons assistant coach Tim Hardaway turns 49. And former NFL player, now turned movie director, Simeon Rice. Sidney Rice turns 29. On this day in history, in 1891, Hallie Johnson becomes the first woman of any race to practice medicine in the state of Alabama. 1904, George Polk becomes the first African-American athlete to win a medal in the Olympic Games. All right, folks, Hip Hollywood has this great story here that I want to go to right now. It is dealing with T. Brandon Jackson, has a new picture coming out. Do we have that queued up, folks? Brandon T. Jackson, let's go ahead and play it. Thank you very much.
Over the years, this funny man has made quite a name for himself in Hollywood. But please, allow him to reintroduce himself.
Hey, what's good? It's Brandy Jackson. I haven't ate for 7 days. And I'm in the Hip Hollywood loft.
You may have seen Brandon on the big screen in films like Tropic Thunder and Lottery Ticket. But while he was hanging out in our loft, the comedian revealed he's ready to show off a new side of himself.
My brand is very safe, which is cool because I love kids. I love the church. I love family. That's my moral. When it comes down to just straight war, it's like, dude, you gotta, like, I have a raw side to me. I'm being more comfortable with being Brandon from Detroit, who I really am, than these, you know, characters that people see me as.
Luckily, his latest role on Mr. Robinson is right up his alley. In the new NBC sitcom, Jackson stars alongside Craig Robinson, who is a substitute teacher by day and a pseudo rock star by night.
I play Ben Robinson, who is Craig's younger brother, who is like the wild rock star and the rock soul. We got a rock soul band called Nasty Delicious. We live in Chicago, and we two musicians trying to come up.
I can feel the temperature rising. You gon' need bikini waxing.
Ben is exactly me 4 years ago. Got ladies coming through. I played the guitar a little bit. You know, I was real artsy back in there, like, yeah, man, you know. Yeah, baby, you know what I'm saying? I was that dude for a second.
But that second is over. And even though Brandon dropped a single for the Big Mamas Like Father Like Son soundtrack,
but when I'm winning these awards, I'll cut my speech short. I'ma do it big,
don't expect that to happen this time around.
They forced me to do a song for the movie, first of all, allegedly. I wasn't, oh my God, you really trying to rap? I'm like, no, but I guess it came off serious because, you know, I'm like this, but I sell. Like, they say you want you to be a rapper, you gotta act like a rapper. So then they was like, we want you to do the soundtrack, so I just.
Oh, y'all be sure to check it out. Folks, tomorrow, News One Now, we'll check with RNSJ for Wild Out Wednesday. I will see you guys tomorrow. Holla!
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.